Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guests today are Lori Thiel and Amy Tobia. Lori Thiel is president of the League of Women Voters of San Diego. The League of Women Voters is a national nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government, works to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influences public policy through education and advocacy. It's a fabulous organization that works towards a democracy where every person has the desire, the right, the knowledge, and the confidence to participate. Amy Tobia is a local leader for Represent Us, a grassroots organization focused on election reform, voting rights, and anti-corruption initiatives nationwide. Her current volunteer projects include Top 4 RCV and the Voters' Voice initiatives. We'll be talking about Top 4 RCV initiative today, and if time permits, we might also be able to have a brief discussion about Voters' Voice initiatives, in which the League of Women Voters also participates. Lori and Amy, welcome to Deconstructed.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
For those who may not know, San Diego was a leader in establishing California's top two primary structure, and it has been supportive of ranked choice voting initiatives that are broadening their reach across the country. Now it's introducing a new wrinkle that's referred to as Top 4 RCV, which both of your organizations support. Before we get into the details, what attracted the attention of your two organizations? And Lori, do you want to start?
Sure, absolutely. So the League of Women Voters is a 100-year-old organization that was founded to support voting and voter rights. We were founded the same year that the 19th Amendment was ratified, giving women the right to vote. And so we have a long history of getting involved in policy and election systems that enfranchise voters, give voters more choice, give them more opportunities, and essentially enfranchise them and empower them to be informed and regular voters. So this particular initiative was attractive to us because it serves those functions for us.
And Amy, how about you and your organization?
Well, Represent Us is the new kid on the block compared to the League of Women Voters. And we've been around for about 8 years nationally. But in that time, our local chapters, as you mentioned, have been responsible for a lot of really excellent work on democracy reform. And when the opportunity to join a coalition focused on ranked choice voting popped up, of course, we were very excited about it because we really believe that for our democracy to thrive, we need to do a lot more to engage more voters in the voting process and to create a much fairer, open, and transparent electoral system. So for us, this is the exact type of thing that we like to work on. And so we are excited to work with the League and other groups to get it moving forward.
And for those who may not be familiar with ranked choice voting, what is it and how does it work? And either one of you could take that.
Amy's the in the weeds person. She's really good at details.
Ranked choice voting is the idea that when you go to the ballot box, you should be able to fully express your opinion on all of the candidates that are on the ballot. So with ranked choice voting, you go to the ballot box and you cast your vote. But instead of just picking a single individual, in our case, there will be four individuals on the ballot, and you will rank them in the order of preference, first, second, third, and fourth. Now, in the event that there is a stellar candidate among those four that has won the hearts and minds of everyone voting at that point in time, who gets 60% or 50% or more of the vote, the election will be over because they have a majority. However, it's very unlikely and very untypical that that happens. So with ranked choice voting, then, if your first choice candidate received the least number of votes, then your vote gets reassigned to your second choice candidate and counted among their totals. And that process continues until one of the candidates has a 50% or more majority of the votes. So with ranked choice voting, you have the ability to not just express your favorite, but your second, third, and fourth favorite, which allows you to vote more honestly at the ballot box.
So now that Amy has given the details of that, I'm like the big picture girl. So I'm going to tell you my perspective on ranked choice voting. It's very intuitive. I know it might have sounded complicated, and the details are important. So Amy's discussion on that is absolutely necessary. But to me, I say, think about when you take your kid to the ice cream store. And on the drive there, you're like, what is your favorite ice cream? What ice cream are you going to ask for? your kid at age 4 knows if they get there and they don't have chocolate, they already know what they're going to ask for second. And they also know what their third and fourth choices are too. It's a very intuitive form of voting, in my mind, that helps people have choices and think about those choices and not limit their choices to just one option. And I think we all intuitively know how to do that.
And Lori, this is all done automatically too. There isn't any burden placed on the voter. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. The voter goes and votes their ballot. And you know, the interesting part about this is they have the option to vote for the number of candidates on their ballot with ranked choice voting, but ranked choice voting doesn't require you to do that extra work. If you have one candidate that you are all in for, and you know that's the candidate you want, and you don't have any interest in any other candidate on your ballot, you can vote for your one candidate. And in that case, this is exactly like voting in every other election most people are experienced in voting in.
And Amy, ranked choice voting has been used across the nation. Explain the difference between how it applies to a single candidate like a mayor or a governor and how it applies when there are more than one candidate like city council or state legislature.
Well, it's a little bit different depending on other circumstances, not so much the role that that person is running for. So for example, in a state like Maine, for example, that uses it for their state elections and federal elections, they have closed primaries. So in those situations, when people are running for office, they use ranked choice voting in the primaries within the party elections in order to elect who is going to go forward into the general election. And then in the general election, they use ranked choice voting to pick the winning candidate. Then you have situations in San Diego where we're looking at electing city council members, but we have open primaries. So we're looking at using it a little bit differently because our situation is a little bit different. It's a little bit less about the office being different and more about the other circumstances of the city or state being different.
In the case of single candidates, would it be accurate to say that it better reflects the majority of the voters?
Oh, certainly. Because instead of just thinking that you have to pick between two ideas, you're getting an opinion of the people that says, well, this person they like second. What was it about their ideas as a candidate that attracted so many people to give them those second choice votes? And that first place winner has to appeal to the people who like all the other candidates. So you can't just win by appealing to a minority of the individuals. You have to win by appealing to a broader array of the people you're going to be representing.
And Lori, you were going to make a comment?
Oh, well, I was going to point out, speaking of historical data and information that has come through from ranked choice voting across the country, it turns out that races that employ ranked choice voting boost their number of women. So municipalities that have employed this election system have increased women who have earned and won election by about 50%. Isn't that right, Amy?
It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 50%.
Well, Lori and Amy, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about Top 4 RCV initiative when we come back. Welcome back. My guests today are Lori Thiel, president of the League of Women Voters of San Diego, and Amy Tobia, a local leader for Represent Us. Lori, when we ended the last segment, you were beginning to talk about the impact this has on promoting women candidates. There are other diversity advantages to this as well. Can you speak to those?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, opening up the election to choices and more candidates enables voters to cast their vote for and support candidates who may not otherwise get their support. A recent example that's gone through in the last few months includes the Democratic primary. So let's just use that because we all kind of know what happened there and we can look back on it historically. If voters had an opportunity to choose a multitude of candidates, if they didn't have only one choice, you might have gotten a different outcome from that. I'm not saying that you would have, but I'm saying that people wouldn't have to vote strategically. And by that, I mean, a lot of voters look to this activity in a strategic way in that they try to figure out which candidate is going to ultimately prevail. And they don't want to waste their vote. If you could see me, I'm doing air quotes right now, waste their vote on a candidate that they don't think is going to prevail because that doesn't really provide any opportunity for their ideas to move forward. that if you get to employ ranked choice voting and you can vote for multiple candidates, it gives a voice to additional ideas that are conveyed by different candidates. And so you definitely see in races that have employed this, candidates who would not otherwise have made the platform being elevated to that point of discussion. So because people get to choose second and third choices, you do see across the board when people employ or municipalities employ this method, women who would not otherwise necessarily have made it to that final platform be on the dais along with other people, white men who were traditionally there, as well as people of color, Black women and Black men and other people of color who've run for offices find themselves elevated to the platforms at the end because of this method of voting.
So in effect, it dismisses the spoiler effect that people were afraid to vote for someone because they'll prevent a major party candidate from winning. That's a challenge that every independent has.
All right. You don't want to inadvertently help the person you like the least by voting for the person you like the most, right? So that's what I meant by strategic voting. You know, a lot of voters don't go to the ballot box and vote their conscience or their heart. They vote strategically, as you were saying, because you don't want to inadvertently help your opponent.
Thank you. And Amy, this top four RCV initiative puts a new wrinkle in. California already has top two. Why four candidates?
So the reason that we looked at the two candidate race going to a four candidate race now was because we wanted to give voters the opportunity to have a higher chance that someone standing in the race in the general election represented their views and their values. Right now, with the top two system, one of the drawbacks that we've started to see is that in larger races, and San Diego does tend to have some larger races for city council and for mayor with a lot of people interested in running, you can have 6, 8, 10, 12 people running in the primary election. At the end of the day, when we pulled to the top two out of that, sometimes those races end up putting forward two candidates who had a really small amount of total support. So for example, I'm in District 1. In my district, the top two candidates combined got less than 40% of the vote, which means that 60% of the voters in my district do not see a candidate running for office right now that reflected their values when they went to the ballot box. That also really limits the debate, and it really makes the debates a little bit more about, you know, two personalities kind of slinging mud at each other as opposed to issues of concern to the voters, because all they're trying to do is differentiate themselves between one other person. So with the top four approach and ranked choice voting, the ranking process changes the dynamic of that election cycle. So those four candidates are trying to compete on the basis of their ideas. They're trying to win your first choice vote or your second choice vote or your third choice vote. And we're really having an election that is focused on what elections are for, which is to get good ideas out there, to get to know candidates, and to allow candidates to express their values in a way that hopefully aligns with yours. So we think that the top four is really important to drive to a much better election cycle and better election outcomes at the end of the day.
And Lori, it seems to me that it's a more practical than academic approach. So you're getting good balance between the competing interests. Can you address some of those interests that are going to have a better opportunity to gain visibility among the electorate?
Well, if we had currently adopted this method of voting right now, and we were going into this general with the ideas that we're putting forth in your podcast today, look at who the candidates for mayor would be. This is an easy example. So if we had the top four moving forward instead of the top two moving forward, when our voters went to the polls in November, they would have choices that are vastly different from the two they're going to get this year. So, you know, you can look at it in terms of what might have been or could have been this year, and you can see that voters would have a lot broader base of opportunity and ideas, as Amy said, to discuss. And not only that, so between now and the general, we're going to have two for the mayor, back to that mayor's race in San Diego, we're going to have two people discussing their ideas about how to move forward and earn voters' trust for that mayoral seat. Imagine how that conversation would be different if we had four people trying to engage voters and employ ideas that voters found interesting between now and November. The whole conversation would be different. Voters would be enfranchised to a degree they wouldn't be under this current system, because they would have four people sharing their ideas about how to move forward and how they would be the city leader versus just the two that we're going to get. And that's not to criticize the two that we're going to get. It's just saying that you'll have a plethora of ideas that will move forward with four candidates that you wouldn't have with just two.
Now, Amy, you brought up the fact that this discourages negative campaigning. Can you elaborate on that a little more? Why does it eliminate negative campaigning, or at least reduce the impact of it?
Well, and the main elections have actually had some great examples of this. So if you think about the strategy of a two-person election, all you have to do is be marginally better than one other person. So it's not necessarily about getting everyone to agree with all of your policies. It's about just being, again, marginally better than one other person. With the ranking process and campaigns of four, you need to really get to know your potential constituents and to have really good ideas. And you campaign very differently because you're campaigning on ideas, not being just slightly better. So what's happened in Maine is they have people who have very similar ideas, but maybe just a different take on a few key issues or different backgrounds, campaigning together and saying, I think you should vote for me first, but if not, the other person you should really look at is this person. So they treat each other very differently because they're idea focused as opposed to personality focused. And in that environment, kind of that mudslinging mailer type thing does not work as well, because now you would have to be throwing mud or money in the form of mailers at three other people in order for that strategy to be effective. So we've seen with ranked choice voting races that that has been largely diminished because of the impact of the ranking process.
And Lori, from a big picture point of view, it also minimizes strategic voting, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. As we talked about before, you know, it allows the voter to have a more thorough and, I would say, gratifying experience of the polls. If you can go to the polls and vote for the person you actually really want to be your candidate of choice versus trying to go there and figure out who everybody else is going to move forward and get on that bandwagon, it definitely gives you a better sense of your civic duty. It reinforces the beauty of being a voter and getting out and doing this great act of patriotism.
Some people have a tendency to vote against a candidate rather than for a candidate. It forces you to look at what the candidates are actually offering to determining which candidate has the better solutions for you, doesn't it, Amy?
Correct. And it also has an impact on the candidates themselves, because if you see another candidate gaining traction, and we've seen this in other races, like say with a really great idea around housing or something about healthcare, and you feel like that is something that is attracting voters to them, it might cause you to reevaluate your platform. So what it does is it pushes candidates to really look at their ideas and make sure that their platforms and their policies align with what the voters are looking for, because there's more focus on that.
And Lori, this also saves money, doesn't it? It eliminates runoffs.
Right. So that's one of the ideas behind ranked choice voting. It does, as you said, eliminate runoffs, because the runoff process is inherent in the ranking process.
Well, Amy and Lori, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about Top 4 RCV Initiative when we come back. Welcome back. My guests today are Amy Tobia, a local leader for Represent Us, and Lori Thiel, president of the League of Women Voters of San Diego. Lori, when we were finishing up, we were talking about the ability to eliminate runoffs and save some money, but that's not even the case in San Diego, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. It won't really have an impact on us as the process of voting in San Diego. That is for sure. And part of that reason is because we are just applying it to the general election, and because we believe, and we, the voters believe as well, that the general election is where most voter turnout happens. So we wanted to concentrate this election reform right there in that sweet spot where voters are going to be coming out and they're going to be participating. As you know, in 2016, the voters passed a measure that said we were going to put our important ballot measures and incremental changes on the ballot when most people show up. And in our city and county, as well as probably across the country, people show up for the general election in a much greater number than they do in the primary. So our proposal is to put it in the general election. And you're right, because of that proposal and that process, it won't really affect the money aspect of it. But let me just add this too. Our coalition did not concern itself with trying to save money when we brought this ballot initiative forward. Our coalition's concern was voter empowerment, voter enfranchisement, and an election system that gives voters power. So, you know, I just wanted to put that out there as far as our philosophical approach to this ballot measure.
That's an excellent point. And Amy, San Diego already has nonpartisan elections in top two. So this is incremental change as opposed to something dramatic. Can you talk a little bit about how this was structured and why it was structured that way?
Sure. And when you look at how ranked choice voting has been applied around the country, every city who puts forward an initiative around ranked choice voting has had to do the same thing that we're doing. You have to put your nonpartisan voter-centered hat on, and you have to think about what the goal of our elections are and who our elections for. And our elections are for the voters to give them the opportunity to have a good assortment of candidates, make an excellent suggestion the best that they can, and then have a system where at the end of the day, they elect people who represent their values and reflect what they want to see their city look like. So when we were looking at what we could do for the city, we really wanted to make sure that we were giving every opportunity to the voters to vote and not taking anything away. We didn't want to diminish unintentionally anything else that was going on. So for example, we looked at the primary. There were 70 plus races on our primary ballots. Only three of them, you know, city council, city attorney, and mayor, are going to be affected by this race. So by leaving the primary intact, we're not accidentally disenfranchising other races. There are places who've adopted ranked choice voting that have eliminated the primary, but a lot of those have off-year elections, not on-year elections. So they're not worried about those same type of negative impacts. We had to be concerned with that because we live in San Diego. And then the other thing that we're focusing on is by adding ranked choice voting to the general, and of course the fact that it's optional, we're expanding voters' ability to express their opinion without diminishing or hurting anyone who's potentially a persistent voter who is uncomfortable with a new system. Because we didn't want to disenfranchise anyone as we were trying to enfranchise more people by giving them this opportunity to express themselves. So if it sounds like we walked a line to be incremental and powerful, we did. And that was our goal.
Very smart approach. Lori, what have been the hurdles for top four RCV in San Diego?
Well, I think there's been a misconception about what it is and what it does. And there's been a little bit of misinformation out there about it as well. I think people rightly are skeptical about voting and election systems. And perhaps now more than ever, people do not want you to mess with their vote, right? Because the last couple of election cycles have just been rife with information that is false regarding how we vote, mail-in ballots, all that stuff. I mean, vote by mail, I'm just going to take a side trip here and say it's very safe. It's a secure election method. And the fact that we are trying to counter that falsehood out there right now is just, it speaks to the situation that we're talking about here today. So I think people are skeptical of new methods of voting. They feel like they're going to perhaps be disenfranchised. And so to Amy's point a while ago about how careful we were to ensure that we enfranchised people, that we gave them more opportunities and more information and more options to vote without taking away anything that they are accustomed to or they expect on their ballot. We allow people to continue to participate in the primary. We did not consider removing that. And we give them choices in the general that they have never had before. But again, as we both have said, you don't have to take advantage of the ranked choice voting option if you don't want to. If you want to vote like you've always voted in your history, continue to behave that way and feel assured that this method of voting will not disenfranchise you. You can still vote like you want, but you just get more options in the general. So these are some of the things we've run up against. People who are complaining about the way we've brought it forward, perhaps the careful nature that we have exercised in conceiving of this ballot initiative. And again, back to your point about it being incremental, you know, just because we promote this and bring it forward now doesn't mean that 5 or 10 years from now, we can't revisit and make another incremental change. This is a step in the right direction.
And Amy, have there been any surprises from your perspective? How have the parties responded to this?
So I think what's been most surprising is how individuals within the parties have been so split on it. We get great support from several individuals, and then we get great pushback from several individuals within the same parties. So I find that very interesting, right? That it's not a unified for or against, but it's more on an individual basis that we see support or pushback. And I have also found it very interesting how non-political individuals that I speak to, where, you know, they're not involved in any activist work and they, you know, they're a little bit more disengaged than potentially people who are listening to your podcast are, how they find it very intuitive when I explain it to them. So it seems to me that folks that aren't 100% engaged in our political process find this very appealing. And that to me has been very encouraging.
Well, Lori and Amy, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to find out more about you and your organizations, as well as the Top 4 RCV initiative and how to get involved? And Lori, let's start with you.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. So we, as I mentioned a moment ago, we're partners in a coalition. It's called More Choice San Diego. You can go to the website. It's called morechoicesd.org. It has all the information Amy and I have shared here today on this podcast and more. You can watch a little video if you scroll down. It walks you through the whole process. My organization, I'm a coalition member there. We are the League of Women Voters of San Diego. You can go to our website, lwvsandiego.org. You can become a member there. You can learn about the positions we take. You can learn about our history with voting rights, et cetera. You can also follow us on social media. We're at LWVSD. On Facebook and Twitter, and we have an Instagram account as well. We have two accounts there, so I'll follow us there as well.
And Amy?
Before I give you the Represent Us contact information, I did want to point out that our initiative is going to a full city council vote on July 21st. So if anyone listening is excited about this proposition and believes it should be at least on the ballot for the voters to vote on in November, please contact your city council member and encourage them to make this a priority. We know it's a very stressful year and there's a lot of important things going on, but our democracy can't wait and this needs to be heard this year. In terms of Represent Us San Diego, the local chapter's website is the best way to get a hold of us. We just updated and refreshed it and we meet monthly online, but we stay very active on Slack and Facebook in between. If you go to representsandiego.org, you can connect with us there, and we look forward to seeing you.
Well, Lori and Amy, thanks for those links. I admire both of your efforts and those of your organizations to make a difference in our elections. Partisan politics has given us a system that limits choice and, in effect, limits liberty. You're both working hard to fix that problem. And Lori Thiel and Amy Tabia, I wish you every success. And thank you for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice to be here.
It's great to be here.